The following is an encore episode of Hour 1 of the Turley Frequency with host Kevin Turley. We hope you enjoy.
Good morning, good morning, good morning. We have a great show for you today on the Turley Frequency here live and exclusive on Archangel Radio. We are talking beer and the supernatural in the next segment. Yep, beer and the supernatural with my good friend Michael Litchens, who will be joining us all the way from the great state of Colorado. We have, as always, the Divine Mercy at the top of the hour, that 9 a.m. Central Time, when we pray for you. That's right. Lines are open now for your prayer requests. Text me on 251-928-2111. Or if you feel free to call me and speak to me, tell me what your prayer intentions are. Call the show, 888-928-0881. Now, story time, we left you hanging a few days ago now because we didn't have story time yesterday. Today we will conclude the strange tale of when Jeanne d'Arc, Saint Joan of Arc, reappeared at the start of the 20th century in the most unexpected of places. So how does that sound? Pretty good, eh? So, with Mike Romano on lead guitar, Reed Hodges on drum and bass, and me out front with microphone poised, let's get this show on the road. Now, I do wish we had such a extravaganza yesterday about Valentine's Day. I really do hope the rest of your Valentine's Day was not anticlimactic. I'm hoping that you all had a wonderful day, whatever you were doing, whether you're married, whether you're dating, or maybe you went online to catholicmatch.com and you were surprised at the variety that was available, the multitudes that were waiting to take you out on a date. Wouldn't it be interesting? I look towards Reed, but I'm slightly cautious. Reed, did Pam ever get in touch with you?
I talked to her briefly, Kevin, but I have kind of held out until this point in terms of, you know, getting anything set up. I'll have to decide. I'll have to look at all my options and decide.
How did she sound? I got to ask this. How was she over the phone? Did she sound like she may be a good candidate?
She seemed very nice.
Okay. All right. That's a start.
Well, you're a very good man. You're a very gentlemanly sort of person, Reed. I mean, were her sentences complete or was she slurring words?
I only talked to her for a second. She was certainly cohesive.
Cohesive.
and perhaps as well coherent. Well, look, you know, the thing is, Reed, I mean, you know, The path of true love, as Mike and I know after many years of marriage, the path of true love is never a smooth one, you know. And sometimes, you know, as the song says, you're looking for love in all the wrong places. So maybe Pam's fridge and the remote control, that could be, you know, the start of something.
Make her a spam sandwich.
Spam sandwich and her favorite show on the channel. But listen, Pam, if you're out there and you want to give us the, because it's kind of a blind date, right, Mike? It feels like a blind date. We've got Reed on one side, we've got Pam on the other. We've heard Reed. Reed is tentative. I think you're probably more interested than you're letting on, Reed. But anyway, so Pam, if you're out there and you're listening and you want to put your side to it and maybe your initial impressions of Reed, Mike and I would be fascinated because we can fill a complete book on our impressions of Reed.
Yes, please call up Pam.
Absolutely.
Give the number.
Mike, your Valentine's Day got better and better.
Yeah, it was fine. We, you know, what do we have to eat? I can't remember. We had chili. We had special chili night, so
okay. It was good. Okay. So, Mike, I know nobody listens to this show, so I can ask you. I mean, you're still together, right?
Yeah.
That's okay. Because you heard our guest yesterday saying that Valentine's was a day she rode with her husband, which I thought was very honest, right? It was a good day because different expectations for different spouses. I kind of get that, you know? Yeah. Some people like hearts and flowers. Other people saying, what do you mean? What day is it?
No, I mean, it's kind of run of the mill, you know, in a sense. I mean, you know, every day is, you kind of get caught up in the routine. And so, you know, we may do something, you know, we usually wait until like the weekend to do something, you know, like as a family together, just because, you know, my wife's working, you know, I come home, you know, I have to work too. And so,
I'm sure it's like 4 or 5 until everybody's even at the house.
Yeah.
So, absolutely. So. As you say, run of the mill in the Romano household, in Turley household, well, it was run to the hills. we'd had enough of it. I think my wife and I very quietly decided that Valentine's Day, as I said, that it's not liturgically correct. That's our get out clause. That's our get out of jail free. So it just means that we don't have to bother with it.
I'll
but listen, if you want to talk to me, Mike, or Reed, or anybody on the show, or you've got a story to tell about Valentine's Day, or maybe you're feeling a bit left out by it all, or maybe, you know, it's thrown up certain questions for you, or discussions yesterday about midlife crisis or dating in general, starting on that process of finding that special person. Well, you can call the show, 888-928-0881. I am here awaiting your call. A kind of agony aunt, or an agony uncle, maybe would be the right pronoun we're using on this show, to be here to help you in whatever that situation is, you know. And also, if there's somebody out there, as we said yesterday, anybody under 80 who fancies a date with Reed, he's free Saturday night, and we'd be very happy to facilitate that. And obviously, we'd speak to your caregivers and your extended family to make sure that they were assured that Reed is a safe bet. Is that okay, Reed?
That's fine. I'm going to have to screen any calls that we might get and just make sure they're not going to paint me in any disparaging light.
You just get your social diary out, Reed, and we are going to cover it from page to page post-Valentine. But in all seriousness, if you do want to discuss any of the post-Valentine blues, then absolutely, let's talk about it. 888-928-0881. Now, I don't know about you, but I've been following. It gets more bizarre at the moment, these stories about UFOs being shot down over the United States. Every time I turn the radio on, there's somebody getting shot down over the United States. But the truth is a little bit more mundane, a little bit more prosaic, perhaps, than we would like. We would love one of these to be shot down or whatever, to land, and for the aliens to come out, and for Joe Biden to be meeting, shaking hands with the aliens. But at the way things are going, what they're shooting down appear to be, by their own admission, rather sort of benign objects. I wonder if they're just shooting down weather balloons. I mean, which wouldn't surprise me. Now, talking of balloons, do you remember a few months ago we were talking about the Powerball jackpot? Do you remember the $2.04 billion jackpot, Powerball jackpot, that was won by a ticket in California? Do you remember? And like a lot of those stories, there's a lot of hoopla whenever it happens, but then it all goes very quiet. Well, I just saw the headline today in the New York Post. And the winning man, and it was a man who won it, is being revealed, and his name is Edwin Castro. I know, I thought that as well, but I'm sure he's not related to the Castros. But he was the man who, on November last year, won that $2.04 billion Powerball jackpot. Mr. Castro, if you're listening to this show, I'd like to introduce you to some of our staff here who deal with online donations. And we'd be very, very happy to receive anything. I mean, never mind the $2 billion, we'll take the $0.04 billion. Any day. But it's really interesting that he's had to reveal his identity, because that's how the law works in California, which is a bit of a shame. If I won that amount of money, you could be absolutely certain I would not wish my identity to be revealed, especially to Mike and Reed. But if it had to be, I think I would probably very quickly go about changing my identity so I didn't have to deal with all the pressures that are going to come with this poor man. So what did he do? Do you remember there were a number of options that he could take a lump sum or this sort of thing? So he did that. He took the lump cash payment, a jaw-dropping, wait for it, $997.6 million. That's a lot of money, right? So he pockets that and he heads off into the mist. But the good news, and one of the aspects of this story which I really liked, was, do you remember the service station, the gas station he bought it at, out in the middle of nowhere in Los Angeles County? Well, the owner, whose name is Joseph Cheyanad, he gets $1 million for selling the winning ticket. Now, I don't know about you, but that part of the story kind of cheered me, because $1 million, people are going to be very happy for him, but and it's going to change his life in a very nice way. But he's a businessman. He'll probably just invest in his business and he'll keep going. $1 million, he'll pay off some, no doubt, some business debts that he has, and he will just continue on. And it's a nice little sum. But I like the way that they gave him the money. But what was really interesting was his son was talking to NBC in Los Angeles. And his son said that the gas station, get this, is selling more tickets now than ever. Figure that out. Why would you think that lightning is going to strike twice?
I was about to say that, Kevin. Don't you think it's reasonable that lightning would hit the same place twice?
Well, what do you think, Reed? Do you honestly think that there's going to be another Powerball winner from that same gas station in L.A.? If there is, I think we need an investigation, right?
The amount of money that he won is the same odds I would wager.
I think you're right.
One in 997 million, like you said. But, yeah, like that's a great story about the gas station owner. He's not even going to have to take his money and go hide in the Caribbean.
No, I mean, $1 million. I mean, these days, $1 million is a very nice sum, but it's cushioning, but it's not radically shifting.
Especially if you are running a business, yeah.
If you're running a business, and he's probably somebody who over the years has seen other business opportunities, and $1 million would be just a great startup, you know? He could start another business. He could buy another gas station somewhere else in LA, and he could start a franchise, you know, the place where you may just buy the winning ticket to Powerball, and he becomes a kind of local celebrity selling lots and lots of lottery tickets and lots of gas throughout the state of California. Though the way things are going in California, cars may be banned in the next few years, so he may need $1 million to move to Alabama, where it's a much better place to live. But I thought that was a really nice story in the midst of so many gloomy stories that we have out there. Now, one of the other things that caught my eyes was that Netflix is up in arms at the moment. Did you hear about this? They are really, really upset that everybody is sharing passwords. Now, I thought that was the whole point of Netflix, right? Your friends pass their Netflix accounts around. Not that I've ever... I have watched Netflix, and I did get the password from a relative, I have to say. I was looking after some elderly relatives, and they had Netflix, and they said, oh, you can watch Netflix. And I found it a complete and utter waste of time, to be honest. I found nothing on it of any interest. But they're getting very upset about this, as is these other ones like Hulu and Disney Plus. Personally, I think that they all deserve what they get. I'm no fan of any of these streaming services. But then again, I never use them. I don't have a television, as I've said before. Reed, radio is the way of the future as far as I'm concerned. But let's ask the younger generation. Reed, do you have a streaming service in your home?
My family does. Most people who I know do subscribe to one. It's more of like, instead of television, a lot of people will do that, because if you think about it, a lot of times cable, you know, can be over $90 a month. So, and a lot of times it's even, close to twice that. So, you know, even if you were to buy two or three different streaming services, I mean, even if they're $15 a month, you're still only looking at between $45, $60 a month. And you would have three or four different streaming services to kind of look at. So that's kind of the mindset that I feel like people who are more my generation are taking.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if maybe we get some audience research, because we know Pam watches a lot of television, according to Doris yesterday. Maybe you could text her and just ask if she feels she's getting her money's worth from her subscription, whatever that may be.
Yeah, invite her over. You know, could stream on Netflix,
Mike,
Hulu.
Mike, do it gently. Just the odd text, you know, warming up, slowly getting to know, building that trust, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
What's your favorite streaming service, Pam? You know,
play it coy.
It's an open question, right?
Yeah, yeah. Play it cool, you know.
Yeah, play it cool, Reed. You know, don't just rock up.
Don't make her seem like you're... Yeah, don't make...
Invitation.
Leave that for Doris to arrange the wedding bells.
don't go in a suit one day around there with a preacher ready, or a priest at Archias to carry out the nuptials. No. But anyway, that's so Mike, do you have a streaming service in your house?
Yeah. We've got like the Netflix and Hulu and
got the whole lot.
Yeah, got the whole lot. My wife watches it mainly.
You may not wish to answer this question without a lawyer present, but do you have Disney Plus?
We do have Disney Plus.
Okay, well, yeah. That was Mike Romano, who used to work on this station, and we'll be right back after these commercials.
My kids like the, my daughter likes the, the Disney shows, like the Moana and, what's the other one? The Frozen. So we mainly for the kids.
So. Okay. So you say.
Yeah, right. I don't get into like the Star Wars or anything like that.
No,
so.
No. Disney's is a very strange organization at the moment, though. But anyway, that's just by the by. So if you're sharing your password on any of these, you are, I can't see how they're going to stop people sharing their passwords. Oh, you know what this means, don't you? This means we have a telephone caller on the line to the show.
A little bit alarming, Kevin. Let's find out who it is. I haven't screened the call, which is probably a bad idea, but I'll just go ahead and put him through.
Ooh, that is so naughty, Reed. It could be Pam.
Hello?
Hello, caller. Who have we got?
This is Kristen. Who was that? I was playing in the background.
Oh, hi, Kristen. Kristen, it's Kevin Turley. You're through to the Turley Frequency here, live and exclusive on Archangel Radio. And I better tell you, you're straight on air.
Hi, yes. I was just wondering, who was that, on the air that was saying, is it me you're looking for?
That's Lionel Richie, Kristen. That's not in our studio today. Lionel is, I don't think he's in any studio anymore. I think, is he dead?
What is Lionel Richie do?
Anyway, what's on your mind this morning, Kirsten?
Well, I'm on my way to class at the community college where I attend, and I was just, you guys were talking about Valentine's yesterday, and my Valentine's was horrible.
Really?
Yes. I had to work and stuff. My parents are making me get a job.
Mm-hmm.
So, we'll work at Baja Fresh. It's okay, but, I have to, cook and stuff and prepare the food. And I'm like, that's gross.
Tell me, Kirsten, what is it you're working at again? What is that?
It's a chain, a taco chain. Mm-hmm. Baja Fresh. We make, wraps, they're, all fresh and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's okay, but...
Do you enjoy that?
It's, first day on the job, and, they're making me, take out the trash. They're saying, I've got to pay my dues if I want to, move up and stuff. I'm like, that's gross. That's not what I signed up for.
No. Well, but everybody's got to start somewhere, Kirsten. I mean, every job has its downside a bit. You've got to work at things. It's not all. I mean, I know you called before. I think you want to go into movies. Is that right? You want to be an actress?
Yes. I would love to. Is there any way you can help me?
Not just at the moment. I don't have any kind of access to Hollywood, but you're living in California. Presumably you have access to people who maybe work in aspects of the movie industry, maybe working in different departments of the film industry, that sort of thing.
But
agents and
I don't
stuff.
Know. I don't know how it would line up with my work schedule and whatnot. I have to, audition and stuff. So, I don't know. I've got to earn money, my parents said. And I don't know how it's going to, work for my schedule. And I don't know. I want to be in a relationship. And I'm just looking for, a good guy.
Well, we might have one here. Have you heard us put out our call for Reed, our intrepid young producer here? Have you heard us? He's been looking for a young woman to have many children with in holy matrimony.
Matrimony? What is that?
Marriage. Getting married.
Okay. Well, like, what is he like?
He's tall, dark, and handsome, and very wealthy.
Really? Does he like making a lot of money and stuff?
Well, I think so.
What?
Well, I mean, he's, you know, I mean, first of all, how old are you, Kirsten?
I'm 21.
21, so yeah. Well, Reed's in his 20s as well. So why don't you check out his profile somewhere? I'm sure there is a profile somewhere of Reed, and maybe give us a ring back sometime. But Kirsten, I'm going to have to go for a break now, you see. So why don't you give us a ring back and see how you're getting on with your new job? I mean, because it sounds interesting. You never know. Jobs always start and you try to find your way, but sometimes they can improve. Sometimes things can get better. Would you call back again sometime for us?
Sure.
That's great. Kirsten, keep in touch. We are here for you, and we're so glad to have you listening out there in Los Angeles.
Thank you. Well, have a great day.
So look, everybody's phoning in about Reed now. We've started something, Reed, here, I think. So we better continue it until we have you marched up the aisle and happily married. When we come back, we are going to be discussing beer, ghosts, the supernatural, and all sorts of weird and wonderful things with my guest, Michael Litchens. Stay tuned to the Turley Frequency. An exclusive on Archangel Radio. So glad to have your company this Wednesday morning. And I have a question for you. Have you ever met a faith-haunted beer critic with a writing problem? No? Well, you're just about to. Michael J. Litchens is an editor at Sophia Institute Press, and prior to that, he was longtime editor at Catholic Exchange. Michael holds an MA in Religion and Literature from the University of Chicago, no less. And when he isn't revising and editing for Sophia, he spends much of his time studying overlooked spiritual experiences, which includes ghosts and the churches of the Old West. Michael's a published author, and he is featured on many national and international media programs, including the great radio show Coast to Coast AM. Especially when it comes to all things paranormal. It seems that a lot of media has Michael on speed dial. So I am delighted to welcome him to the Turley Frequency. And Michael joins us down the line from his home in the Sentinel State. Michael, welcome to the Turley Frequency.
Hey, thank you so much, Mr. Turley. It's great to join you.
Do you know what, Michael? Michael, I better just let our listener know, Michael. I've known Michael for at least about 10 years, I think, or thereabouts. And I used to write a lot for the Catholic Exchange when Michael was editor. And I have to say, Michael was a wonderful editor, kind and supportive, and also a good sounding board for things. But we worked all those years together, and I used to listen to your podcast and everything. But I don't think we've ever spoken until now.
I was thinking that while I was on hold. I don't think we've ever actually spoken, but we've written hundreds of emails and letters to each other. So, yes, that's correct.
Isn't that a kind of weird world we live in, Michael, where you actually know people, but you never actually speak to them?
Mm-hmm. I like to talk about it a lot, especially in American Chestertonianism. I've met a lot of Chesterton fans via the internet back in when blogs were a thing in the early 2000s, and they've become lifelong friends. But a few of them I only met maybe 5 or 6 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Now, we are just the day after Valentine's Day. Now, I've got a vague memory of an email from you, Michael. I think you got married recently, didn't you?
Yes, I got married back in 2019.
Oh, well, it seems like yesterday, but it was quite recent. And I remember you sent out a lovely email with you and your soon-to-be bride, and you were, and I hope I replied and sent you the very best wishes. So that's great that you're living together happily there in Colorado. So listen, today, Michael, I wanted just to have a chat, really. I mean, this program is not so much interview basis as discussion basis chats. So but the thing, when I was looking and researching your background, the problem with you, Michael, is you've got such an eclectic mix of interests that you write about, that you've spoken about. I don't know where to start. So I'm going to throw the ball to you and say, where do you want to begin, Michael?
Well, I appreciate that. Given that yesterday was Valentine's Day, one of my passions, and particularly I've talked about this with St. Valentine, is I love finding relics, especially relics that aren't well publicized or might have gotten lost in time. And particularly St. Valentine, I found his relics in three different countries in three different forms. But
tell us more. Tell us more, Michael. Yeah, which countries are we talking about?
Not too far. Just a little over the ocean from you is, of course, Dublin, where the Carmelites take care of why am I spacing on the name of the church all of a sudden?
It's called White Friars, I think.
The White Friars, yes it is. It is the White Friars who take care of one of his relics, and that one was one of the funniest moments, because I came in looking... I wanted to find the church anyways, but of course I was looking specifically for St. Valentine's relics. And when I was in there, one of the priests saw me, and he, just by looking at me before I could even say a word, he said in his Irish accent, "Are you looking for the relics?"
Did you have soon-to-be wife with you at the time?
I did not. She came to me. She was with me when I found another St. Valentine relic when we were honeymooning in Prague. I had mentioned to her that passion. We already meant to go to see a couple of old crypts and things like that, but I mentioned that we're going to Vyšehrad Castle, which is the southern castle of Prague, and that basilica had just rediscovered, I believe, a thigh bone from St. Valentine. And of course, what do you think I want to see? Because they had just discovered it probably 2 years before we had gone down there. And if you look really hard, it's in the midst of other relics that had just been, of course, Prague, and the Catholic Church in Prague has gone through a lot of trouble. So this had gotten lost during the communist period and just rediscovered, I believe, 2017. And so there we have that. And, of course, the most famous, just a little south from Prague, the most famous relic of St. Valentine, his skull in St. Maria Cosmedian, which is the same church where you'll find the Mouth of Truth.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah,
you're a little bit of an expert, really, on an expert on many subjects, but also on the cult of St. Valentine, which I have to say I played down a bit yesterday, Michael, because you know in the new calendar he's been relegated out of existence almost, I think, to June, start of June. But St. Cyril and Methodius here in Europe is a big deal because they're secondary patrons of Europe, and it was their feast day yesterday. So I think it's really only in Europe anyway, the Anglicans and the Lutherans, who are observing Valentine. Maybe people who are observing the pre-62 missal as well. Maybe they're into St. Valentine. But it sounds like you've cornered that market. But Michael, I think I'm right in saying that you weren't always a Catholic.
No, I joined the church in my early 20s. Like a lot of curious young men, I wasn't sure. I won't even say this is a young man problem. This is now an adult man problem. But I was lost, wandering, and didn't have any foundation. And I discovered Catholicism partially through the influence of my grandmother, who came from a very Irish Catholic background. And so she, well, my parents weren't practicing. My grandmother was very practicing. So when I stayed with her and lived with her for a period of time, I went to church. But I didn't want to become a Catholic until she was long gone and I was in my early 20s. But, so I joined in 2004 and now it just feels... It's starting to feel like a lifetime, so I think I'm almost there to understanding what it means to be a Catholic.
Well, of course, you were in inverted commas corrupted along the way by meeting such other Catholic converts as G.K. Chesterton and the like, who have you've kind of imbibed something of their rather beery, celebratory aspects of Catholicism. I mean, with your attachment to beer and other things. Was that part of the attraction, the sort of joie de vivre of people like Chesterton and Tolkien and all the rest of it?
It absolutely was. I've written about this pretty publicly, but I have a pretty severe form of major depressive disorder. So that particularly means, without getting into the medical science, because I barely understand it, but I don't experience that, you know, that joy that you see on TV that many advertisers want us to feel. I don't feel complete by a new car. I don't feel joy if I buy a new product. Like, it takes a lot for me to feel happiness and a sense of joy. Mm-hmm. The last time it's moments... like being with my wife in an old church or things like that. But what attracted me, especially with guys like Chesterton and more so St. Francis of Assisi, was that they saw suffering, that they acknowledged the suffering and talked about how it's real, but they said that you could still find joy in the suffering. And compared to almost every ideology out there, because I'm writing about that right now, actually, the common ideology is that all suffering is bad, and if you endure suffering, at least from an American standpoint, you did something to deserve it. You're earning your suffering. Whereas Catholicism, it's like, doesn't matter how good your life is, it's inevitable, but God can still be found in the midst of suffering. And that was a very attractive philosophy to me.
Yes, and you're making me think, Michael, that our faith is based upon the symbol of the cross, which is, you know, all about suffering, right? I mean, it's about the God-made man who we cause suffering to, and there's no resurrection without the cross. And, you know, you're talking about other religions and other ideologies, and there's lots of feel-good stuff out there, absolutely feel-good in inverted commas. But there's also a sort of move, which you may have experienced outside of the Catholic Church in certain denominations, which is almost a try and remove the cross and go straight to the resurrection. You know, they've taken on board, if you like, some of those aspects of the more secular materialistic ideologies, which are really promising a heaven on earth, which is a sure recipe for disaster and depression. No,
it absolutely. So I grew up actually American evangelical. That was the religion of my parents, and there are some grand and wonderful people within that movement. But one of the things that terrifies me, because I'm seeing it come into American Catholicism now, is the prosperity gospel. Mm. This idea that if you pray hard enough and you show God that you're a good enough Christian, God will give you money, cars, a good job, a happy wife. Like, God is just going to give you all these things and you'll never have to suffer again. You'll never have to have any problem. Of course, anyone who preaches the prosperity gospel almost always hits a wall when, say, someone they love gets cancer, something that will happen to 40% of us by the time we're elderly, you know, something that can happen to any of us for no apparent reason sometimes. They don't know what to do with that because they did all the right things. They accomplished their contract with God. They fulfilled the obligation. So why is God not making my life easy peasy? And what I always want to ask them is, why don't you just accept that maybe that's not what God wants for us?
That's right. And I think I think it was G.K. Chesterton that said that happiness is a mystery like religion that should never be rationalized, you know, in the sense that, you know, the more I see people striving after happiness, they're often the most miserable people I've ever met. You know these people, you've ever come across them and say, I just want to be happy. You know, I want everything to be nice. I want us all to be happy. Well, you know, that's a sure recipe for disappointment, because life's not like that. Human beings aren't like that. It's got something to do with what happened in a garden many, many years ago, and an apple and a serpent. And we are all marked, I'm afraid, marked and wounded. I'm in conversation with Michael J. Litchens, who is an editor, writer, broadcaster, but also a traveler. As you can tell, he's been in many, many countries. But Michael has also got or has developed a special interest, which I'd like to talk about, if I may, in the next segment with you, Michael, and that is around your work in editing and putting together books and writings of very famous exorcists.
Yes.
And you probably know the exorcist I have in mind.
Sure do.
Father Gabriel Amorthe, probably the most famous exorcist of all time because of his writings, and he was, correct me if I'm wrong, he was the chief exorcist for Rome for many, many years.
Yes, he was the Diocese of Rome's top exorcist, which means he got to meet all the popes and also got to really experience the strangeness of what it is to be a diocesan exorcist, who I've talked to a couple by now, and it is by far the strangest vocation you can ask for, one that some dioceses don't even like to pretend is still a position in their diocese.
Well, just pause there for the moment, because you've set that up nicely for us, Michael. So when we come back here on the Turley Frequency, we will be discussing exorcisms and Michael's particular interest and particular insight into that. So a little bit of parental guidance. If you're going to be concerned about any of that material, you might want to go off and get a cup of coffee and come back for the Divine Mercy at the top of the hour. Okay, stay tuned to Archangel Radio and to me, Kevin Turley, here on the Turley Frequency. Exclusive on Archangel Radio, and my name is Kevin Turley, and I'm your host today on this program. And I'm delighted to say I'm joined by Michael Litchens, who is a writer, an editor, an author, a broadcaster, and a frequenter of such wonderful shows as Coast to Coast AM. And when I've listened to Michael on Coast to Coast AM, he's often talking about exorcisms, and in particular, one exorcist, that is Father Gabriel Amorthe, now no longer with us, but for many years was the chief exorcist in Rome. Michael, did you ever actually meet Father Gabriel Amorthe?
I wish I had, but no, I never had the pleasure of meeting him, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. But you would have met probably or spoken to people who did know him.
I have, yes. I've known a couple people who had the pleasure of knowing him, seeing him talk, or in a couple cases even working with him in minor ways. And is wonderful to hear.
And what sort of impression do you gain of the man?
A similar impression I always gain from interviews and his writings, which is he was a very serious man who still kept his sense of humor, but more than anything, what people talk about is the intensity of his mission. And that intensity he brought, whereas where we might think of exorcism as kind of a horror movie, you know, the background to one of my favorite horror movies, The Exorcist. It's really a healing ministry, and that's how he approached it, that he was bringing healing to people. So even in cases where he didn't think somebody was possessed but might have mental illness, he would often find psychiatrists to work with them. So that was something that I think gets lost in a lot of the dialogue, is that for Father Amorthe, he's bringing love and healing to people who are in desperate need of it.
That's right. And I had the privilege of interviewing Father Jeremy Davis. I don't know if you've heard of him.
Yes. Yes, I have.
And as you know, I wrote and did a number of articles, but I also did his last, probably his last media interview on television, which is now finally being released. And he was a very close friend of Father Gabriel in Rome. Mm-hmm. And it was those two plus a couple of others that set up, I think, is it the International Association of Exorcists?
That's correct, yes.
So there was a direct link, and he was, and I sort of quizzed Father Jeremy about Father Gabriel, and he just, in that very English way, just said something like, you know, first class or a wonderful man or something. And it was just like, you know, but there was this wonder. I mean, to be able to sit with both of those men and listen to their thinking and their discourse on this subject is fascinating, but very similar to what you say. When I pressed Father Jeremy, Father Jeremy's background was even more intriguing because he had been a psychiatrist.
Yes.
So he saw his ministry of exorcism very much as, just as you've said, Michael, one of healing and one of release of the poor, unfortunate soul from the clutches of the evil one. So he just saw it as a continuation in a priestly guise of what he had been doing in the secular world as a doctor, a medical doctor, psychiatric doctor. So that's kind of interesting. But did Father Gabriel, I mean, it always intrigues me as to how people end up exorcists. Father Jeremy was just chosen out of the blue by the then Cardinal Hume here in London. But how did Father Gabriel end up being an exorcist?
I would almost say that Father Amorth was very much called. You can kind of almost see it from his biography. As a teenager, he ended up taking up arms against Mussolini and the Italian fascists. So almost like from as a young man with all that unbound energy, he still had a call to face down evil and take it out if he could. And that was something I think that continued on to his exorcisms. But similar to Father Davies, he fell into it. You know, he didn't study for it. He wasn't pursuing it. He kind of was chosen by his mentor, Candido Amantini, who was also an exorcist. And to a lesser degree, he was felt called to it because of his friendship with Saint Padre Pio, who really called him and challenged him to become a better priest. And so he fell into it by accident, but like so many priests who fall into their calling by seeming accident, I should say, they took it up and still worked it hard as if it was their lifelong passion.
Absolutely. And Father Amorthy and Father Jeremy Davis here in this country, they were exercising their priestly ministry in this realm at a time when there was not just a great deal of skepticism in society in general that such things actually exist, but even within the church.
Yes. And it particularly, I think it's interesting that both priests practicing during the 20th century, because even by the time the movie The Exorcist came out, there's a lot of bishops and other prelates who kind of wanted to pretend that we still weren't doing exorcisms, that it wasn't a ministry we focused on in the Catholic Church. And Father Amorth was there, you know, talking about the tens of thousands of exorcisms he had performed, and he was there to show, yes, this is still a part of the Church.
Yes, and I think the publication of his first volume, what was it, An Exorcist Tells His Tale, I think was the English translation, Ignatius Press published it. You know, it was one of, I remember seeing it, and even then it had a certain sensational element to it because of what you're saying, because there was a kind of downplaying of the ministry of exorcism. So There, it's interesting because when I spoke to Father Jeremy, and this was at the very end of his life just a couple of years ago, he had been the solitary exorcist in London, in Westminster Diocese, for many years. Now, I can't imagine what his workload must have been like in this city, I can tell you. But he did say to me that just before he died, he was saying that there are now at least 10 priests involved in exorcism ministry across London, at least 10. So that's a tenfold increase from his beginnings. Yeah. Surely that's a good sign, you would say, Michael, that people are dealing seriously with this, which we believe as believing Catholics, that there is evil and there is a devil and that these things can infest people's lives. Not always. There needs to be a proper, legitimate pastoral approach to this so that some people have psychiatric problems rather than demonic problems. Mm-hmm. But it's a sign. It's a good sign. And maybe would you even suggest a little bit of a legacy of the writings and the witness of Father Gabriel Amorthe?
I would 100% agree with that. I also think the work that he and like Father Davies and other priests who came together to create the International Association of Exorcists has been a great impact, because that gives people, one, a bit of a fraternal familiarity between each other. So now exorcists kind of know each other. They have a bit of a network, and that makes the ministry far less lonely. Something I've heard from people that work in this ministry is it can feel very lonely, because it's not like, it's not like building hospitals or things like that in countries where you can show the slideshow to your fellow parishioners and talk about it all day. They felt really cut off and almost like they were relegated to the back room. So now they have this network where they can freely discuss their work with each other. And that has really opened up the ministry.
You're listening to Michael Litchens, who's an editor at Sophia Institute Press and an author and a writer, a traveler, a beer critic, and also an expert on the whole realm of the writings of Father Gabriel Amorthe, who's probably the most famous exorcist in modern times. If you've a question for Michael about any of this, then do feel free to call in on 888-928-0881 or text me on 251-928-2111. I have a text here, Michael, from a listener, and question to you is, do you have an opinion as to why people are drawn to this now? I think the question is drawn to this ministry now. So, I mean, are there priests who are drawn to this ministry? That's the first question.
I think absolutely, and I think a lot of people are drawn to this ministry. I'll be honest, especially I saw it in me, and I cautioned people about it before. There tends to be a lot of curiosity around this subject.
Mm-hmm.
And while that's not necessarily a bad thing, curiosity can become very dangerous when we're trying, especially when we're talking about things like eternally ancient souls and demons and things like that. But I do think priests are being called to it because there's a need. There's a lot of spiritual curiosity, like I was talking about, out there. A lot of people are getting involved in what I like to call hipster occultism, where, you know, they are going to go play with spiritualities, and most of that is just people play acting, but I think it opens up doors that can be dangerous, and as such, there's a need for it. There's a need for priests to lead us and to guide us, and when necessary, help us out of the troubles we might fall into.
Absolutely, and I couldn't agree more. It's a subject which needs great caution for anybody listening. Mm-hmm. There are ministries within the church, lay ministries, which help exorcists, the Ministry of Deliverance. Yeah. And I remember speaking to Father Jeremy about those lay people who help him in that ministry, and suggesting that I might like to come along as a journalist and sort of maybe witness something. And I had to say to him there was absolutely no chance of me ever going anywhere near that, for the very reasons you say, because I actually heard a tale of another individual who went out of curiosity, who wasn't a believer, who went out of curiosity to an exorcism. And when he came home, the next months of his life were ruined by all sorts of weird and wonderful things. So much so, and remember, he's an atheist. He actually asked the priest to come around and exorcise the place he lived and bless it and cast out whatever was there. So there's a warning in this, warning to the curious. These things can follow you around. We're not playing with Hollywood stuffed dummies. These are real entities, and we need to be very wise wise and very careful and stay away from him. I forget which saint said it, but it might have been John Bosco said, the devil is like a ferocious dog on a chain, and you should just stay close to your mother and walk on by very quickly. And I think that was pretty good advice. I don't know what you think.
Oh, I agree 100%. Like, even a guy like me who loves a good ghost story, I often caution that you quoted a title from M.R. James, one of the greatest ghost story writers.
Mm-hmm. That's
but
right.
There is that warning to the curious, but there's something to, when we get into the things like spiritual warfare or the demonic, it's a nice reminder that you don't have to know everything, you don't have to see everything, and in some places, you should be nothing but cautious.
Yes, and I think as well it's partly personality types, Michael. I mean, there's some people never going to be interested in that sort of stuff, and that's healthy and that's good. There are some people will be drawn to it, but they need to reorientate themselves back to the light and away from the darkness. I have a friend who spends far too long peering into this darkness, and I'm sure it's not good on a number of levels for him, and I've said that to him. Even though he's a Catholic, I've said you've got to be very, very careful with this stuff. So we're children of the light. So let's end on a slightly more positive light, because I know you're a beer critic, Michael, so recommend to us a beer for Lent, something that we can drink on a Sunday, which isn't Lent, and we can enjoy. What have you discovered recently that you would recommend to our listener?
I am a huge, huge fan of Trappist Breweries. So if you can find it, thankfully, they're available in many countries, but especially during Lent, it's nothing's greater than drinking a monastic ale. Here in America, we have the first American Trappist beer from Spencer Abbey, and they have just released, I'm trying to remember the German word for it, but it's basically there would have been the daily beer for the monks. And that one is truly a fantastic beer. It has a little bit of wheat. It's a wheat-based ale. It uses all American ingredients with just a little bit of basil, and it is perfect as far as beers go. So if you can find that, it's Spencer Abbey. It's wonderful.
I can almost taste it as you're speaking. Michael, we're about to run out of time, so just tell people where they can find out about you, about your writings, and about your work.
Sure. They can go to my website, mlitchens.com. And then I work for Sophia Institute Press. We always are doing some great things. SophiaInstitute.com or wherever you like to spend your social media time.
Well, that's great. And thank you for getting up so early in Colorado and getting on the show this morning, Michael.
It's absolutely my pleasure, Kevin. Thank you so much for having me.
At last we have spoken. And for me, it has been a great pleasure. Thank you very much, Michael.
Yeah, God bless you, sir.
Okay, folks, that was Michael J. Litchens, and you can check him out at his website, which he's just given. When we come back, we will be discussing the Divine Mercy, and we will be asking you to pray with us. If you're listening to me now, then you will be praying with us. Remember, you can call the show on 888-928-0881 with any prayer requests you have, or feel free to text me. Lines are open now, 251-928-2111. Stay tuned to the Turley Frequency.